Welcome to the Good Reading Podcast, proudly sponsored by Book People Gift Cards. A Book People gift card is the perfect gift for readers of all ages. Simply order your gift card online at bookpeoplegiftcards.org.au. Redeem at any one of over 500 bookshops across Australia. Visit bookpeoplegiftcards.org.au.
1836, Bandy Bandy, Prospect Farm, Nala Willy Waibala, Yagangai Maraga Yanguri, Mara Yangurai. Spring was a bit cool, but the sun shone warm on our backs. Waratah flowers grew red and juicy, so Nunganai flying foxes came to eat. Soft rains fell. I saw a glittering billabong with 100 swimming black swans. I thought, they are Mulgu, whispering my mother's language. One white swan drifted in their midst. My heart cried out to the bird, asking how it came to be amongst the others, so alone and wildly strange. I counted mother swans with fluffy cygnets while my master loaded his gun to shoot and eat those birds, baked with potatoes in beef dripping. I wondered if the meat would be white or black. The dawn mist slipped into my lean-to and I heard heavy breathing. I shifted on my straw pallet bed and felt a heavy weight on the blanket. I sat up. A dead black swan lay on the blanket, its red beak open and neck oozing crimson blood. The webbed feet, like grey bat wings, dangled over the edge. I screamed and he stood and pointed at me. A little present for my girlie. My master, Farmer Bryant, laughed as though he would burst. I was 10 years old and I wanted to kill that man. But Farmer Bryant was sneaky and swift as a snake. I stared daggers into the back of his pimply neck, like maybe I could pop one and watch the exploding green pus. His sweaty pong made me gag. I hid a sharpened stick in my smock, sharp enough to draw his white blood. It was a heavy woundy. It would slide inside his gullet. By touching the point, I felt better. Anyway, a bum-trap constable might get me if I stabbed the master. My nose had to be stuffed with fingers to escape the blast of his farts, like blunderbuss shots.
Julie Jansen is a Barabarongal woman of the Darug Nation of New South Wales. Julie is a novelist, playwright and poet. Her Indigenous crime novel, Manduka, The River Serpent, was long listed for the Miles Franklin Award and the Davitt Award in 2023. Her second novel, Benevolence, was shortlisted for the Barbara Jefferis Award and nominated for the NIB Literary Award and the Voss Literary Award in 2020. Today I'm talking to Julie Jansen about her new book, Compassion. Julie Jansen, welcome to the Good Reading Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Compassion is the life story of Duringa, a Barabarongal woman and one of your ancestors. She's a wonderful character, strong and immediately appealing, and for me, fully formed as a character from the very first pages of the story. Who was the real Duringa, and how is that reflected in the wonderful character you've built around your ancestor?
First of all, I acknowledge that I wrote this book on the land of the Yuin people, the Brinja Walbanga people of Maruya on the south coast of New South Wales. Look, I was inspired to write this because I do quite a lot of research. I love to research. I worked as a historian for Professor Peter Reed for quite some years at University of Sydney History Department. And I was able to do quite a bit of research on my own family, my own Aboriginal family, Dad's family. And I found some interesting things on Trove, which we're talking about my two-time great-grandmother. Her name was Mary Thomas. I call her Nell James. It's complex why one has to change a name, but often it's appropriate because you make a lot up when you write historical fiction. And I found that she'd been up in a magistrate's court in Windsor the first time for stealing 9 fowl. And then the next time she was up in court for stealing a herd of cows. The third time she was up in court for stealing a herd of horses with an accomplice. And I thought, what a woman. You know, this is in kind of the 1850s out in Hawkesbury River country, which is Darug country, which is inland from Sydney town. And she just absolutely inspired me because I knew that that particular great-great-grandmother had died in bed in Windsor with my auntie asleep as a baby next to her. And I was very close to my auntie Gladdy. And I felt this real connection through Auntie Gladdy that Mary had died in that bed. And she was such a great character. I began to form the story, calling her Doringa, Nell James, for Compassion.
And Compassion is the second installment of a trilogy, which began with Benevolence, the story of Murugging or Mary James. Murugging and Doringa's stories are chronologically sequential. What are you seeking to tell in the continuity of experience for Indigenous women in colonial New South Wales?
There is an overlap, which I didn't really intend to happen, but it just did. Sometimes your writing gets a bit out of your own control. And I wanted to tell the story of the daughter of Murugging and what happened to her, because a few people asked me about Benevolence. They said, you know, we were unsure about whatever happened to the baby. You know, she is reunited with her mother, but then at the end. And I thought, well, what happened in those intervening years before she is reunited with her mother? And it led me to doing quite a lot of research about what was happening to Aboriginal women in that time. And a lot of people survived by being servants. And they were taken, or they married convict men or lived with convict men. And it was a time of great catastrophe for Aboriginal people all over Australia. But in New South Wales, it was kind of the post-massacre period right around Sydney. And it was a period when people, if they realised they went to live and work with white men, they wouldn't be murdered, they wouldn't be killed. So you had to become a servant. And that certainly is the story of my family. They were all servants, all the women. I trace my heritage through the women, except to my dad, and every one of them was a servant in some form or another.
Before we get to the story, Compassion struck me as a wonderful evocation of the Sydney area, from La Perouse to Richmond, Blacktown, Barrenjoey, from Woolloomooloo right up to Newcastle. All told from an Indigenous perspective, it is such a rich history.
Well, I've been called a cartographer, which is kind of interesting, because I really do like to go to the place that I want to write about, and by actually staying, you know, I stayed along the Hawkesbury River up near Wollombi with my husband way out in the bush, and spent quite a lot of time around Newcastle, which I love that Newcastle area. So even though historically my family did never travel to that Wanneroo and Awakabal country, I was very drawn to write about it. And I know the Hawkesbury River country very, very well, because my father would take us camping up there all the time. We'd sleep in a cave and sleep on beds made of ferns. Go, Dad. He'd carry army greatcoats with him, and they were our blankets. I can't imagine that. They must have been under me as well. I can't imagine actually sleeping on the ferns. But that's what I remember happening as a child.
And Doringa is on a quest to find her mother and her father. As a half-caste 13-year-old girl, it seems to be an impossible task. What are the obstacles? What conspires against her?
At first, she's indentured as a servant. And when she doesn't bow down to the revolting master, the farmer, she is sent off to the female factory. And there were occasions in the historical records for New South Wales when Aboriginal young women ended up in the female factory, supposedly because they'd committed some crimes or another. But they're all amongst convict girls, especially Irish girls and English girls that are convicts. And so I found that a really interesting idea, that my character of Nell would end up in the female factory and what would happen to her there. And I was really determined to make her a very strong and powerful character, because the historical record of my own family showed me that great-great-grandmother was. And great-great-grandmother never went to jail, whereas her accomplice ended up in the lunatic asylum out in Parramatta, where he died. But she always escaped. And I thought, how on earth does a young woman talk her way out of being sent off to jail? And I realised she must have had the gift of the gab, same as Dad had and I had. And we were really great. Dad was a great storyteller. He's deceased now. And I'm a really good storyteller ever since I was a child. And I figured it was just handed down. And she just talked her way out of being sent to jail.
She's got another great gift too, and this is her connection to the spirit world, which you evoke so beautifully. Show me where to walk, she asks, and a spirit in a gum tree replies, Nell, go to Sydney Town. But what does Nell find in Sydney Town?
Contrary to what people would think, Sydney was full of Darug and Tharawal and people from the south coast, from the Illawarra area, around the time of the 1840s and 1850s. A lot of them lived at Woolloomooloo in old boat sheds. And As you'd often, if you're in Sydney nowadays and you go down to Circular Quay, there's always a couple of Aboriginal men, sometimes a woman, playing didgeridoo or playing clapsticks and singing and collecting money from the tourists. It's always been that way. Ever since the white men invaded Australia, Aboriginal people have been collecting money from the tourists down at Circular Quay. And also the Gadigal men, who were the traditional men from Sydney, used to perform mock battles in the Domain. And once again, collect money. It was a way of making a living. And so I evoke that story because it's a story that people really don't know, just how Aboriginal people actually survived in those early days around Sydney.
At the Parramatta Female Factory, where cleanliness and godliness were the things that they aspired to, despite what a former Prime Minister might have said, that was slavery.
Oh gosh, yes. The women were treated really badly, fed just basically, gruel and hardtack biscuit, and had to do all of the kind of washing for the colony, really, and sewing. The factories for sewing, especially laundry work, and everything had to be starched and immaculate, and you've got hot steaming vats of starch and boiling water, and any babies that were born were taken away to the orphan school, where they most of them. 80% of them just died of starvation because they're taken from their mother's breast and fed gruel. So it's a hideous part of Australia's history.
That world that Dooringa occupies, it's a very sensory place. The natural world is full of these wonderful smells of the bush and the water, the rivers. But the white world, it's an unnatural world. And I love the way you describe these things. Frankly, it stinks of vomit, dried blood, body odour. And here's a beautiful phrase, the yuck in dried up crotch.
Of a terrible imagination. Juxtaposing that the natural world with a world inhabited by human beings that have often been mistreated themselves. Remember, in those years, the 1830s, 40s, 50s, 60s, in New South Wales, a lot of people were ex-convicts who'd been treated appallingly. Often cruelty begets cruelty. I depict that, but I have got some very nice. English people as well. They're not all bad. I hate the idea of novels that are Aboriginal people all good, white people, Irish people all bad. Bloody ridiculous. I'm a mixture of both races of people, and I admire both sides for various reasons. And I think you have to create fully rounded human beings and not some kind of archetypal kind of rubbish.
There are some beautiful moments and some beautiful people, but I want to talk about Dooringa on the run. Now, Parramatta Road, that's an ugly corridor at the best of times, but for Dooringa in the mid-19th century, it was especially dangerous, rife with stories of rape, murder. Hunger is a constant motivator, and she acquires the reputation as the wild native thief.
Well, she does do a bit of stealing. As I said, the research that I did about the two times great-grandmother is that she was stealing very early on. I think it's just a survival way. If you're starving hungry and someone's got some chickens or some eggs, you'll just take them. I just had to come to terms with her stealing. I wrote a play once called Black Mary, based on the story of Mary Ann Bugg, a true historical character who was the paramour of Captain Thunderbolt, Frederick Ward. And I loved that play, and it was on at Belfast Street Theatre and the Festival of the Dreaming prior to the Olympic. And I'd always thought I'd like to kind of revisit that character. So there are a lot of aspects of Mary Ann Bugg in my character of Dooringa, of Nell. I even have her meet Mary Ann Bugg very briefly in the middle of the novel. But I thought if there was one woman who was like that, surely there were others. And I definitely know that she was a thief. Well, that family coming down my father's side, I don't have to go too far back to find various uncles up in court for stealing cows and all sorts. They were not particularly good people.
Like any great story, there's a love interest, an attraction to Thomas Freeman, and compassion does detour into his experience. But his journey is quite different to Dooringa's. His is more of a descent into alcoholism and into madness.
I kind of pay homage to my deceased brother, Brian, who had schizophrenia for most of his life from the age of 17. Dearly beloved of me, such a lovely, talented, wonderful young man, a poet and artist like me. And that disease took him from us. But so this book, I try to kind of bring forward the notion that someone can be mentally ill, but still have a wondrous side to them, which is lovable. Kind of makes me cry when I think about him, because it was in the 70s and 80s when young people like him were locked up in psychiatric hospitals and forcibly given electroshock treatment and all sorts of terrible, terrible things that happened to him. So yeah, I kind of bring forward his kind of character into this character of Thomas Freeman.
Duringer's brushes with the law are very disturbing, and I wondered, is there a legal archive you can consult, and what might you be able to glean from that archive for the white perspective that it must inevitably take?
Unlike David Marr, whose brilliant book, Killing for Country, took him, I think, nearly 10 years to write and has detailed referencing throughout it, I'm not a very good academic and not a good researcher. I do read widely and I do go to libraries and look at records, but I think there is a danger for historical novelists to spend too much time in research and not enough time writing. And now that this is my, you know, second historical novel, I've learned that lesson kind of the hard way, that you can waste several years in libraries. I think the information is useful, but it can only be as useful as it inspires brilliant characters. And it's the writing of the brilliant character that comes from that information you get is the important hard work. And if you want to spend too much time researching, then write a history book. Don't try to write a historical novel.
These stories that you've written, Benevolence and Compassion, they bring a political dimension to the titles of the mindset of the colonising forces. What might the third book in this trilogy look like?
I just feel exhausted you even asking me that question. For sheer pleasure, I'm writing another crime novel for Auntie June from Maduka the River Serpent, University of West Australian Press said, oh, well, Auntie June's obviously got to have a series. And I kind of went, oh, a series? All right. And I feel a little bit that way when I say to people, oh, this is just, you know, Compassion is the second book of a trilogy. And a little voice inside me is going, help. Yeah, I think I will manage one more. I hope so anyway. And it'll take us up more to about 1900 when that particular great-great-grandmother of mine died in 1909 out in Windsor. And I kind of want to maybe end with that scene where she, the ancient old lady who's had this extraordinarily colourful life, dies in the bed of my Auntie Gladdy, who's only a baby. The next part of the story with my family is fairly conventional because that great-great-grandmother married an ex-convict and they lived in Windsor with relative respectability. In those days, a lot of people who were of Aboriginal descent simply put on the white makeup and gloves and a dress and people ignored the fact that they came from an Aboriginal background. In fact, my family used to just downright lies of denial, trying to hide the fact that we were both of convict and Aboriginal stock. A double stain, double shame. Is the term. So I'll try to uncover the understory of that.
White history is in itself a fiction, and history can be a fiction of omission. And I learned that from Anna Funder recently, her book about George Orwell and Eileen O'Shaughnessy. But how do you counter a fiction that's so entrenched?
With good fiction. You know, to write the story from a different point of view and reveal that the black history of Australia and the shared history. I always think it's much more interesting to look at how we share the history of this country instead of for years and years and years. When I was a child, you just ignored the fact there's any Aboriginal people at all and just talked about, you know, this particular explorer, you know, how they conquered the Blue Mountains. Absolute rubbish. And without Aboriginal people, none of it would have happened. So I'm interested in countering that narrative and taking back the story into an Aboriginal perspective. It's so much more interesting than just one side. A challenge, a real challenge, because there's very little documentary information. You've got to just take these little tiny seeds of information and use your imagination. And elders. I mean, I talked to many elders up in the Blue Mountains, right down the Hawkesbury River, people who would share really important information as I gained the protocols to write these stories. And I'm very grateful to them.
Julie Jansen, it's been great to talk to you. And thank you so much for joining me on the Good Reading Podcast.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
I've been talking to Julie Jansen about her new book, Compassion. It's published by Magabala Books, and you can find it at goodreadingmagazine.com.au. My name's Greg Dobbs, and thanks for listening. This Good Reading Podcast was brought to you by Book People Gift Cards. Share the joy of reading with a Book People Gift Card. To find out more, visit bookpeoplegiftcards.org.au.